Hello, this is the Midweek Movie Podcast. Yep, we are here. If you've been listening to us with the movie breakdown, you'll know. You know what? Even if you're not listening to the movie breakdown, you may have heard there's a pandemic. So, you know, there's nothing for us to do other than podcast. And what will we podcast about? Well, movies, because that's what we do anyways. However, you may have noticed there's not a lot of movies coming out these days. There's not a lot of theaters open and stuff like that. But we're still going to find stuff to talk about and very excited about all that stuff. I'm Scott Martin.
And I'm Christopher Spicer. But I do have to say that if you got your news from the movie breakdown about the pandemic, I just question how you consume media. Like, I'm just sad if we were your breaking news source.
Yeah.
Especially since we didn't really tell you much about it.
Mm-hmm.
Other than just we're home now and we're going to do an extra show. So as far as you know with the news, the pandemic is just... Oh, and the fact that we also tried to tell you that we're an essential service.
Oh, we are. Aren't we?
Well, we haven't been shut down. Mm-hmm. We're as essential as Taco Bell.
You run for the border, but you can't. Don't run for the border. Whatever you do.
No, just...
Do they even use that slogan anymore?
My assumption is no. It's more like, watch out for the wall.
I haven't eaten Taco Bell in a long time. 2015, to be exact. I know the year. 2015. Exactly.
I can't tell you the year. I know it was Christmas shopping, and we had just done a whole bunch in the mall. We were hungry. We didn't feel like going cooking, so we went to the KFC taco joint thing in the food, what do they call them? Food gardens?
Food. I like food garden, but it's food court.
Well, I'm going to call it a food garden. Because it's just a plethora of beautiful bits of food. We went to the mall food garden, and it was a KFC Taco Bell joint thing. And we did this like big taster pack for like $20. We got a bunch of tacos and a whole bunch of different things. That was years ago. I haven't gone since. I don't remember it being a traumatic experience, but I've never returned.
Yeah, I mean. I thought I really didn't like Taco Bell anymore, but I was doing some work with a friend, and he took care of lunches, and, you know, I was actually like, this is kind of, I mean, like, for, you know, a working day meal, it was sort of heavy with the fattiness of the cheese and not necessarily the highest grade of meat and stuff like that, but it actually was, you know, I didn't mind it. Now, if Scott today was faced between a Taco Bell and
like a real Mexican restaurant?
Yeah, something tells me Taco Bell wouldn't happen. But I
feel that's the popularity maybe of Taco Bell, especially places like Brantford, mm-hmm. where there's not a bunch of authentic Mexican restaurants popping up. We had one, but I think it got closed for a shawarma restaurant.
Okay. Yeah.
Shawarma.
Yeah. So all this to say, what Taco Bell, the memories that I had from other years, I think let me tell you this. Probably the last time before this I had Taco Bell was the time I was walking home from work when I lived in Cambridge. Well, when we lived in Cambridge. And I stopped by the Taco Bell and I got the family pack, which was 10 soft tacos, two fries supreme, a few other things, and I walked home and I ate it all. And then that was, I think, the last time that I had Taco Bell because I thought this stuff is just horrendous. But it could have been a personal decision on how it was consumed.
I feel like getting a giant family pack of Taco Bell is a really good way to get you off of Taco Bell.
Yeah, it kind of did that. Yeah. Yeah. So then in 2015, I was surprised. It was fun. It was tasty.
I'm actually kind of surprised, though, because you're saying this is when we lived in Cambridge, so that'd be when we lived in a place called Slum House. I'm kind of surprised that taco meal took you off and to the point where you were saying, like, I don't think this is the healthiest option. compared to like what we were eating at the time. We're the guys who just ate Pringles for a week because they were cheap.
They were cheap. And they came with a 2-liter bottle of, I can't remember if it was Coke or Pepsi.
Either way, I mean,
two Pringles.
I can tell you this. I couldn't do that now. Like, I don't think I could survive that now.
Two Pringles and a 2-liter of Pepsi, I believe was $4. And so how are your grocery dollars going to do any better?
But your body could do a lot better.
Yeah. Oh, tons. And that followed up. That was right after the two Big Macs for $2 event. So we went right from that right into the Pringles and Pop. Yeah, that was, yeah.
And that two Big Macs for $2 deal was extra awful for me because I worked literally right beside the McDonald's.
It was not good for you. And if I was walking to school, I'd find myself walking the long way to walk past McDonald's. And then on my way back home from school, after having consumed two Big Macs on the way to school, I'd walk the long way home again, swinging by the McDonald's for two more Big Macs. So usually it's probably about a total of four Big Macs a day.
Yeah, well, that was like the day, that was during a time where, you know, I'd get like a Big Mac and then, and chase it down with like a Big Tasty or whatever that thing was called, along with like a large French fries and a large pop. Just thinking of that now gives me a heart attack.
Yeah, and I was the same way. I get like a big sandwich with the meal combo with the large fry and the large pop, and then I'd get another big sandwich to finish it off. It was not the most tasty. Or no, it was tasty, not the most healthy. One thing I do want to pimp, a friend from Slum House, he's on Instagram as Cameron Mitchell Woodworks, does great woodworking. We've actually started an Instagram page called My Shithole Kitchen, and it was basically inspired by, what if we were back in that shithole kitchen of Slum House and, you know, enjoyed cooking like we do today? And then it, you know, his kitchen, he calls his kitchen a shithole. My kitchen is a bit of a shithole. So it's making food in just a bit of a shithole.
We're going to get our kitchen renovated. So I'm going to have the anti-shithole.
Well, if you want to help out, if you want to contribute, you better start getting taking pictures of stuff before you get a kitchen renovation.
But then I'd have to avoid the nice new oven we have.
Yeah, don't get that in the shot. Don't get that in the shot.
Because then people would start calling me a poser.
Yeah.
You just want to be a shithole.
Uh-huh.
Really, like, show the rest of my house or my property. Because, I mean, I'm not one to brag, but I'm going to brag. I've got a very nice house and a very nice property.
You've got a great property. Like, it's the kind of one that you look at and you think, oh, that'd be great for a family. But then you also think, well, that'd be great for retirement. Like, it's a house that is great for basically all stages of life. You've got the house that you can just live in.
And it's great for being complimented by the delivery people. Because I think every time someone brings something to our house, they always be like, wow, I love this neighborhood. I love your house. So, you know, it's good for building up my esteem for my resident esteem, my living esteem.
Your living esteem. Yeah, so when they come here, what a shithole kitchen you have. Like, you didn't even see the inside of the apartment. I know, you have a shithole kitchen.
I can smell it.
I can smell it. Mm-hmm. So anyways, just to pimp that, we've got that up and rolling, posting different foods, and yeah, I guess being those people on Instagram now that take pictures of their meals.
Well, we've come a long way. We've come a long way from, you know, ordering two Big Macs and eating Pringles to both of us now cook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting right in the cooking, looking at making my own mustard and stuff like that. So get going.
I made stuff like pad thai and such too. Like I made like a gourmet Parmesan chicken. Like I've done some ambitious stuff, which yeah. I don't think 15 years ago I would have even thought of. I would have ordered it at a restaurant.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. It's, yeah. Like I look back and just think, wow, I survived. I honestly don't even know what I survived off of for many, many, many years. It really just rank stuff.
It's almost as if we lived back then in preparation for the pandemic.
Getting our bodies.
We had very scarce covers.
So we've been through training. So we should be good at this.
I look back at Slumhouse as my coronavirus training. You and I are going to survive because we lived through this.
Oh, basically, it's like the SNL commercial with John Belushi, little chocolate donuts.
Yes.
that's what it is.
We also spent days not seeing sunlight, I believe.
Oh yeah. It was a very interesting time.
So I just say, yeah, we're fully prepped. Because good gosh, we don't live in a time where you want to go to the grocery store often.
No, and I was actually just gonna say I want to do a huge thanks to the people that are working in places like that. Like, first and foremost, the doctors and nurses and porters and everyone involved in the hospitals and everything like that, as well as the cashiers at places. Like, you think about the person working in a little gas station kiosk. That's not the kind of place people want to be. It is nice having a job. It's a huge blessing having a job right now. But when the advice is to not leave your house, there is a downside to having a job.
Well, especially like something like the grocery store where I walk the dogs. I don't go to the grocery store often. We try to make it about every 2 weeks right now. But where I walk the dogs, I walk past the grocery store often. And the few times that we have got out of the house, I don't know if I've ever seen that parking lot not jam-packed since this has begun. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if there's not a peak period for shopping.
Yeah.
And I'm also just wondering, like, Brantford's not that huge. Like, are some people just living at the grocery store now?
That's crazy. Our grocery stores up here, if they get busy, they're not by the afternoon. Because when I go to the grocery stores, it's usually late morning, early afternoon, and they're not too bad. Although you run the risk of, you know, stuff being off the shelf.
Yeah, because if you want canned goods or frozen goods, that apparently, according to my wife, just flies off the shelves. And toilet paper. She hasn't seen toilet paper once. Luckily, we bought all that before chaos hit. But I'm just wondering, is there people that like just put up like a chair and sit in the bakery aisle and start making themselves sandwiches and stuff?
It's craziness. The fact that there's that many people at the grocery stores, and then like you said, it's the cashiers, because they're coming in contact with so many people. You know, up here now they're getting plexiglass partitions, but still those people are handing their groceries over to you. You're handling the groceries if they're using cash or whatever. It's, you know, I've got a huge, huge amount of respect for those people.
Yeah, and I think every grocery store is different. I know Zehrs is doing a pretty good job of implementing a lot of things in place. They've asked you not to bring cloth bags just because you're bringing in something from your house, mm-hmm. potentially. You have to bag your own stuff now at Zehrs, which is totally understandable. I think they still accept cash, which I'm surprised. I would have thought, because I know a lot of delivery places, like Domino's, basically say you're paying online through credit or debit at this point. And I feel that would be the easier thing, is just force people to have to. But I guess maybe some people don't have it. So then how do they pay, I guess, is the problem.
Mm-hmm. And I will say this, cash being accepted at Tim Hortons is very, very nice, because when I'm working, I always swing by Tim Hortons for a second cup of coffee, and I always just pay with a toonie because I don't want to use debit for a $2 transaction. But
yeah, no, I get that. I just know that's just another thing of transfer. But yeah, I think certain places you do have to allow it. I guess grocery store would be one. Tim Hortons, like, you'd just be bottlenecked like nothing else.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of places that say, you know, if you have debit or credit with a tap, please use that first and foremost.
It's crazy times. The craziest thing I get though right now, there's two things that I find really crazy. One is there is so many people still, and I can't believe this, or just the idea of like, what am I just supposed to not work right now? Like, we're just supposed to not go out. And they try to talk about how, like, I mean, the flu kills people too. And so, I mean, why are we making like a big deal out of this? To the point where they're not getting that this is like an unprecedented time. Like, yes, this is a history making thing. This is an unexpected thing. This is because they're like, we haven't ever done this before. Yeah, I know. That's why they call it an unprecedented event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the flu comparison, like, I remember being younger and making that comparison when there was the swine flu outbreak in 2009. But mortality rates of that were much, much closer to actual influenza than, COVID-19. Influenza, you know, you're not even, you're way below, I believe, even 1% mortality rate with influenza. And COVID-19 is, you hear different things, but roughly around 3.5%. And if young people think, well, that's only 3.5%, yeah, it is only 3.5%. Well, when you're talking about hundreds of thousands and soon to be millions of people getting this, that 3.5% ends up being a substantial amount of lives.
And the big thing is, I mean, I have three people within my family who are doctors. Two of them are ER doctors, and both of them have made it very clear that the emergency rooms are overflowing and overburdened. So it's not just a death rate thing. It's a fact that our hospitals are basically overflowing. Like they do not have the supplies for it. They are not able to meet demand. The doctors are overworked, they're burnt out. So it's also just an idea of maybe it's not death, but like we're destroying the healthcare system right now and people still could get other sicknesses. People could still break arms. So let's not flood the system with this.
And that's a huge point too. I believe I read on CBC News, I think it's like 1 in 4 ICU beds now is COVID. And someone might say, well, that's only 1 in 4. But when you think ICU beds are usually, at least from my memory, they're pretty rare things. Like that's why they try to get you out as soon as possible because they need them. And so yes, to have now all of a sudden 25% of those beds just taken up with something else when they're usually in use anyways, that's massive.
Yeah, and I find it funny that people who say like, well, we've never had to do this before, or this is what not normally happening, because it's like, yeah, I know. That's kind of the point. That's why everyone's scrambling, is because this doesn't happen every single year.
Yeah, and like myself at work, it's mad. Like, it's not madness. I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say much about my work situation other than the fact that literally every single day, everything is changing. And yeah, it's like you go into work and it's an unknown. You don't know what things are going to be like from one day to the next. Just like things on a governmental level, things on, you know, a workspace level. It's hard to keep up, and it's definitely one of those things where you can feel it's unprecedented because nobody has a clue how to, you know, really handle this. It's all theory.
Yeah, no one knows how to handle this. No one knows what the future is. And that's why the other thing I want to mention here is I think our leaders, for something that they never signed on for, something that would have never been expected. I mean, pandemics are not, worldwide global pandemics are not normal things. I think Justin Trudeau and I think Doug Ford, I just mentioned them because they are the actual like leaders of where I live. I think they're handling it really, really well. And I mean, they're from two different parties. And I mean, I've had my issues, but I think for something that's so unexpected, I think they're both doing the best they can. And I think they're making the best decisions they can. I mean, people who know me personally know that I just couldn't stand Doug Ford. I did not want him get into office, but I feel like he has done the best he could. I commend him. he's gone back on some of his policies in order to make this thing kind of work, and I think he's doing the best he could. And this leads me to the other thing that's really been frustrating me about social media is how many people are using this incident as a political thing and use it to attack their leaders and going against someone. I just feel like both of them, I commend them both.
Yeah, and I think people, if they're looking on social media to, you know, attack politically, look at how opposition parties are acting right now across most of the world. Everyone realizes...
Most of the world.
People are recognizing this is not a partisan time. That there has to be support. You can't... If a measure needs to be passed through, that you have to vote for it unless it's... like crazy or make amendments, but you have to work together. So if you're on social media and you want to score political points, look at what the oppositions around most of the world are doing, and you'll see that it's not the time. Don't do it right now. It's not the time.
Yeah, I should say that. Like the opposition in our country, I think, has also been very commendable. Yeah, no, I've liked it across the board. It's just some of the people who use this to tell about why they think this is the worst prime minister. It's just the wrong time to do it. I think, yeah, Canada, I've been proud with how we've handled it. And I do agree with you that most leaders across the world have been good. There's one leader who I just don't feel like mentioning his name. It's still been crazy, but I feel no matter what, the man's going to be crazy and a self-promoter.
Speaking of that, I've almost watched completely through Tiger King on Netflix.
Yeah, I've heard of this. I haven't dabbled into it yet. I've heard of it. I've heard that it is all kinds of crazy, but it also has some deep, powerful moments. And apparently there's not a single sympathetic character in the miniseries.
It's madness.
Madness worth tracking down?
Yeah, no, it's madness because it's entertaining. Like, there's nothing that's not entertaining about this. And the people, you think, okay, this is a mockumentary. This is scripted. They had, like, drunk college stand-up wannabe comedians must have, like, had a party. And then someone, you know, watching an old video of Jack Hanna on... Letterman must have said, hey, what if we have these crazy people who are into big cats? And that's what it feels like. But it's real. This really, really was something. And it looks like, according to the guy who made the documentary, it all started out, he was doing this one little thing about venomous snakes. And there was a guy at the store that was getting one that said, hey, look what I just got. And then he had a big cat in a cage in his van. And then that just started him, this guy, looking into, you know, what are big cat owners like? And then he caught this madness over 5 years.
And is there not a person in this called Joe Exotic?
Yeah. There totally is. And I'd forgotten, up until a certain point, I'd forgotten that I'd seen him before when a number of years ago, there was a clip that went kind of viral. Well, if I came across it, then it definitely went viral because I'm not very internet savvy. But it was this really backwards political debate from Oklahoma, and I remember watching it, thinking, "Oh crap, this guy's seriously running for governor." Yeah,
Joe Exotic ran for governor
after he ran for president.
I think, is any of that covered in the documentary?
Yeah.
I think I do need to put this on the top of my queue.
I think you do, because like I said, that sounds scripted. This crazy guy running for president and then for governor. Yeah. Who thinks he has a chance both times?
It should have been narrated by the guy who, one of the characters from FUBAR.
Or both. Get Terry and Diener in there.
Yeah, Terry and Diener. Oh, Canadian classic.
Oh, total Canadian classic.
Though there was this thing of like, what was it? 100 Canadian movies you need to watch, or I can't remember what it was. It was to commemorate the birthday of Canada, and I can't remember how many it was, but I feel like FUBAR missed the list somehow, which to me is really weird, because it's not like they were, because I mean, Goon made it.
Yeah, and I mean,
FUBAR... And FUBAR to me is a pretty, like, maybe not well-known or any box office hit, but I would say...
It's a huge cult hit.
I don't know if you'd use the word influential, but in some ways I would think it's influential. Like, I think it definitely speaks into film history.
I do too, and I think that you have to recognize that it's a cult hit, right? That there's people that really liked it, and to the point that it got a sequel.
Well, right there. I mean, I don't know how many Canadian movies were able to make sequels, and it got one. Was it FUBAR 2 you said it came out right around a friend's wedding?
Yeah, literally.
It actually made it to theaters then, right? Like, limited run.
Yeah, in Toronto, the day he got married, his wife didn't like the idea of us saying, we're just going to run to Toronto and back before the wedding. Because we were, I think, probably about like 3.5-4 hours from Toronto. But so she didn't like that. But we could have been back maybe in time for the last part of the reception.
You also would have been able to, at the reception, be able to give people a sneak peek into what happens in FUBAR 2.
Yep. But that didn't, people didn't seem concerned about that at the time. Although now I bet you that they're kicking themselves for not letting us go.
Have you seen FUBAR 2 yet?
No, it was given to me by you, I believe.
And that is a fact.
And I refuse to watch it until I can watch it with you and another friend. The friend who got married on the day. He liked FUBAR so much, he got married on the day of FUBAR 2.
Is that the reason why I haven't seen FUBAR 2 yet? Because we made a pact?
We made a pact, yeah. Because
I was trying to remember why I haven't seen it yet. Because it's available in Hollywood Suite. I'm like, but I keep feeling like I shouldn't watch this yet. That's why.
You shouldn't. You shouldn't. I've had the no, it's the Blu-ray, I believe. Anyways, I've had it for almost 10 years and I haven't even taken the plastic off because I refuse to watch it without you guys. Cuz otherwise, what's the point?
That makes sense. I'm glad I now know why I have this feeling of like guilt anytime I start thinking about watching it.
I've thought about watching it too and just not saying anything to anybody.
Maybe that's what I should do too. And then no one will ever know.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Canadian classics, Donald Sutherland.
Yeah. So this is not necessarily a full on correction, but we were talking on the Monday show that, cause I was mentioning that sort of how Animal House brought in a bunch of kind of stars like a Kevin Bacon and Karen Allen, and sort of this was one of their big starts. And then you had sort of mentioned Donald Sutherland had already been in movies before, and I sort of said, yeah, no, like he was one of the ones that that maybe had an established name already, along with Belushi. I just wanted to reiterate that, yeah, he was pretty established by that point. Like, he had done a lot of TV, like, throughout the 60s. He had been in a lot of TV shows. And then he had been in Dirty Dozen, which would be a pretty significant movie. And so he was in that. He was in MASH, a movie we reviewed. So that would also be pretty significant. He was in Kelly's Heroes. He was in Clute, where he plays the lead character. So he'd already been in lead roles. Day of the Locust as well, which I know was a big box office thing. The Eagle Has Landed. And in another John Landis movie the year prior, the Kentucky Fried Movie, which that's a movie that I would say sort of was the big, broad, slapstick parody movie before Airplane.
Yeah, he had a... he had a career, and we honestly, he was one of those things where kind of dropped the ball a bit on that one.
Yeah, because we were basically like, well, we think the first great train robbery came out around that time. Like, there was a lot that came out.
There was a lot, yeah. So that, although the Great Train Robbery is pretty good with stunts that'll never ever happen again, but he was already known before that.
Yeah, no, that was a big box office movie too. And I'm sure there's some of these movies too that were big at the time that I'm looking at and mean nothing to me. I was just naming the ones that I know. Oh, another one. This is the one that made me realize it.
Don't Look Now.
I started thinking, Don't Look Now. I was like, Don't Look Now was before Animal House, so he was established. And then I saw a whole bunch more, but yeah, let's say that one more time. Don't Look Now also came out. That was 1973. And I've never heard of this movie, but it must have been a big box office hit with this name, Alien Thunder.
I was looking at that too, because I'm thinking, how is that not just amazing? Amazing. Aw, it looks like it's a cowboy movie.
But it's called Alien Thunder.
Well, I know, but you had cowboys versus aliens.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking at it now, and I've totally been bummed out that it... I thought he was going to be thundering with aliens, like space aliens.
Well, sort of like Star Crash. Except he wasn't in it. I'm not saying he was in it. Christopher Plummer was in it for a trip to Vegas or Venice, but like I was more meaning like, do you picture Alien Thunder being along the lines of Star Crash?
I was picturing it as the movie that actually truly inspired George Lucas with Star Wars.
Alien Thunder.
It's still an awesome name, and I feel like if you and I decide to make it a sci-fi epic, we could still use that name.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we'll make it an epic.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if they changed it because someone like didn't want them to call it Redskin Thunder.
See, people would understand that's inappropriate. However, if you were in a sporting league, people would say, nah, nothing wrong with that.
Here's the thing, okay? Not only is there people that like, oh, come on, Cleveland Indians, it's just fun. Oh, come on, the Redskins, it's just fun. The Kansas City Chiefs, come on, it's just fun. Even though they're very racist connotations with those team names. Not only that, but they still do the, like during the game to cheer on their team. And I'm like, at least get rid of that.
Yeah, the tomahawk chop. Yeah. Actually, I don't think the Chiefs, like, to me, I don't think the Chiefs is as bad as some.
As bad, but they were the ones that were doing the chant during the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. And to me, the Chicago, like, and maybe someone's like, well, you're just defending them because they've got a great jersey. I think the Chicago Blackhawks is like a respect. Like, it seems, at least it seems to me that it's about respect.
Yeah, I'd have to look at it. But yeah, that one doesn't bother you as much. It's more the ones where, like, it'd be more Redskins and Indians that clearly, like, that's not what they are. Mm-hmm. And, like, the Indians for the longest time had a super offensive logo.
Oh, the logo and the mascot? Yeah, it's like, you could be all, well, you know, it's paying tribute to them. Oh, really? It's basically like you would have seen in that, in the World War II Popeye video, you're a sap, Mr. Jap.
Yes. Yeah, where you say, we're paying tribute to that culture.
That's right. It's a Hanna-Barbera person meeting an African Bushman. Because those were racist.
Yeah, it's a tribute, you know, with the Japanese characters that were nearsighted, acted childlike, and were conniving. It was a great tribute.
It was a great tribute, yeah.
Or, yeah, the African-American, like, Bushman who, well, not African-American, I guess, the African Bushman with, you know, the giant lips and basically resemble more of a monkey than any human. It's like, yeah, a great tribute.
Good tribute.
There's a reason why, you know, some of those cartoons are very hard to find now.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it?
Maybe. I mean, it's crazy though when you talk about our culture and things that were acceptable. Like we talk about how like Animal House doesn't age well, 16 Candles doesn't age well, and that's only the 70s and the 80s, not that long ago. And speaking of 80s, like in the 80s with like wrestling, you had a character called Slick, who was African-American, and he basically dressed up and looked like he was a pimp. You had another character called Kamala, who was from deepest, darkest Africa, the Ugandan headhunter, who was a cannibal, who came out in total, like, tribal gear, the big giant mask and a spear. And you're like, this was the 80s. And then you go to the 90s, and there was another black character who's called the Godfather, who talked about pimping ain't easy. It's like, I mean, those weren't that long ago, and there's no way you can't say that stuff wasn't racist. Or any time that a Japanese wrestler attacks someone from behind, commentator Gorilla Monsoon would say he Pearl Harbored him.
And at least they use Japanese wrestlers to play Japanese wrestlers.
Yeah, always, always. Never, you know, Hawaiians.
Yep.
Mr. Fuji was from Hawaii. Pat Tanaka was from Hawaii. Japanese wrestlers, sometimes they did have Japanese wrestlers. Most Indian wrestlers that went around and did their, like, rain dance and their and going, blah, 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 and all that type of stuff, and did their tomahawk chops in wrestling, most of them were Italian.
Are you saying Tatanka was...
No. Tatanka was actually legit Native American. He was one of the legit ones. But in the 80s and the 70s, many of them were. Tatanka was. Chris Chavis was. So I will give him that. Okay. I think he was trying to do a legitimate homage character. I think he was coming from a sincere place. The previous ones were racist character jokes.
Okay. That doesn't make me feel so bad for being a fan of Tatanka then.
Yeah, no, Tatanka, he was, from everything I've heard, he actually was from, and I think he was trying to do a bit of a homage. Now, he did have some of the stereotypical things, he still did the rain dance and the tomahawk chop, but at least he actually was Native American.
Mm-hmm. The WWE, on that topic, they're doing some free content, right?
Yeah, a lot of places are. I mean, there's definitely, it's really cool seeing some of these big companies realizing that people are kind of stuck at home and we've got to kind of help them out. And WWE, they have, so WWE is the big giant wrestling company for those people who don't know, used to be the WWF. And they have this big, massive library since they bought out almost all the wrestling companies, and they have tons. And so they use that big, massive library to launch what's called the WWE Network a few years ago. It's a premium network. In the States, I think it's $9.99 a month. In Canada, they have it through the cable companies. I think it's $12 a month or something like that. So it's a pay service. But for now, they haven't said for how long, but they basically announced, for a limited time, all the WrestleManias, and there's been 35 of them, all the WrestleManias are free, and all the SummerSlams are free, all the Survivor Series are free, all the Royal Rumbles, all their big events are free, and I think a lot of their other ones too. Like basically almost all the pay-per-views that were WWF pay-per-views you can watch for free right now. The WCW ones, you still need to be part of the network and some of the other stuff, but you can watch all or quite a large amount of WWE pay-per-views all the way back to 1985 for free right now. All you have to do is basically open up a free account, give them your email address. Now, be careful. There's some language, I think, where they can try to trick you into subscribing to the WWE Network. So just be very careful when they say, like, if you provide, especially if you're from Canada, if you give us your cable provider, then you can watch even more stuff. And that's their way of saying signing you up. But, I mean, as long as you're aware of that, they're giving a lot of free stuff, which is really cool. So if you're an old-school wrestling fan like me, doesn't care anything from the last 5 years, but the old-school stuff, you've missed a few pay-per-views because we didn't see them all during the time. Sometimes we had to pinch the pennies. I could finally watch them, which, yeah, it's really cool they're doing that. I think that's a great way of kind of making the company look good, especially since they've done a lot of, I mean, I railed against them, I think, last week on this show. So it's cool that they're offering tons of free pay-per-view. So you can watch, like, the first ever Survivor Series or WrestleMania 3 or whatever. It's really cool.
I think that's really awesome. I love that. Like, we've got our cable package through our internet provider, TechSavvy. And they, I don't know if I had mentioned this last week before, they are giving all the news stations for free, and they're giving all the children's stations for free right now, which I think is such a great move organizations are doing that. You know, it's it, especially at a time like this is a time where a lot of people are going to be pinching pennies because a lot of people now are, you know, losing income and stuff like that. And the fact that these businesses are, you know, willing to do this, I honestly don't think it's, you know, about, well, when they get back in, they'll be, when they get their jobs back, they'll be buying our stuff or keeping the subscription, because I think these organizations know that a lot of people are going to be in serious debt when they get their jobs back. I do think there's a lot of altruism here.
I think there's some altruism, but I mean, it is also beneficial for them. I mean, if you enjoy the product, then maybe one day when you have the money, you're going to remember that thing they did and you'll be more willing to try the service and stuff. So I think, but I think you're right. It's not necessarily from a place of, oh, we're going to totally hook them, but it's beneficial for them. But yeah, I think it's a really good thing. I mean, even a lot of people have lost their jobs. I still have some work, but it's drying up every day because, I mean, when you write sales copy for places and places are shutting down, they don't really need me to write ads for them right now.
No, it's sort of the ripple effects from it, right? Like, because I think a lot of people would think, well, you write for stuff online and the internet's not shutting down, but they forget that, you know, as the economy really slows down, it's really going to completely affect so many people's jobs who do, you know, write content for, you know, for sites, ghostwrite or whatever. It's going to have a huge effect on them.
Yeah, especially if you're a freelancer, because I mean, I wrote for several movie sites, but right now a lot of them are tightening up and just basically using their full-time staff to write for them and stuff. So, yeah, no, it's definitely tightened up. But in some ways, that's allowed me then to try to be more innovative and think of different things. That's one of the reasons why we started the midweek again, because I knew, like, okay, things are going to be tight, so I got to think of other ways to get my name out there, get my brand out there.
That's right. Get the brand.
Get my brand. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, yeah, if I increase stuff on the blog and if I do more podcasts, one, it helps our sanity as we get to hang out, but it also... It was an idea of sort of reaching things out and opening maybe some more doors for me and such. And it's cool because we've got several people who contacted me recently and said they really loved last week's midweek breakdown. They thought it just felt so natural. It just felt like two people hanging out in a conversation. They loved that tone. So that made me really happy to realize that we took this gamble and it worked. And I do want to tell people, if you are really enjoying this and you enjoy having this second episode, like some of you have said, the best thing you can do, honestly, is to keep on promoting it. And if you do promote it, and during this time, if we can grow a really large audience, which I'm going to be honest, is a way of leveraging potential to monetize this, maybe this extra episode will stick.
Yeah, when everything slowly starts getting back to normal, it is going to be harder for us to be able to do this. But I mean, if there were, like in your case, if there was a bit of money, and I'm not saying that we're just doing this for money, because we've been doing it for free for a long time now, and we do it because we love it. But if there was some money to offset what you would lose in that time you'd spent when the kids are at school during the week, that's your time to write. And that's when we would be recording. So yeah, there would need to be, for this to go on, there'd be need to be some sort of financial offset to that.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, yeah, there's not as much to do. This is also our way. I mean, we're not the WWE, we're not a big company, but, this is our way of offering some extra content to people. This is our way to give you a little bit of enjoyment. I do also want to mention that Rogers, which is the biggest cable company like in Canada, they also have been offering lots of free stuff. They have taken away any bandwidth limits on the internet right now. So everyone basically has unlimited internet. There's no caps right now, because they realize a lot of people are working at home. So that's one thing they did. They've also offered a free long distance to everyone across some across the world. So that was that's a huge thing. So you could get in touch with all those people. And they've offered a bunch of channels, and like the yours, all the kids' channels now are free.
I think that's just very cool. I like it. It's sort of like seeing the opposition work with the government, and it is sort of like seeing how some of these companies, which, you know, we easily badmouth all the time because of their business practices,
yeah.
But now, you know, it's really neat seeing a different side of them, and yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah, I don't have all the list of stuff on me, but I know there's a lot of premium kids online websites that have a bunch of educational games. There's a bunch that Everett really liked, and he's always been able to play like the free stuff on it. And he's been always asking me to get a subscription, and just, I mean, thing, you can't spend money everywhere. So I've always said, well, maybe not this time, Everett. And he was really excited when he logged on to his Prodigy account, which is like a math adventure type game. And he is a premium member right now, and we did not pay for anything. And so I think it's just a sign that a lot of these online educational companies are basically offering all their games and stuff for free, because they realize kids are stuck at home and we're still trying to educate them. And so it's awesome to see all these educational services and kid gaming companies offering free stuff. So that's another example. Almost all of them right now are free. That's why I didn't necessarily bother doing a list. I know Prodigy right now, like I said, is doing member counts for free, and I think there's a few others. So if you have kids, just look into a lot of them. It's pretty easy to find them online. I also know CBS Access. You can get a free month trial from them right now. So that's where Picard is, and I guess other stuff. I don't know. Oh, Twilight Zone. Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone is on the CBS Access. I know you could get it from Canada. I know Picard, I think, is on another channel somewhere in Canada too, but I think you could also get it from CBS Access. And I also know Hasbro is streaming 15 episodes of the original G.I. Joe on YouTube, so you can see how horrible that show was.
Whatever fondness we may have had, it evaporates pretty quickly.
Yeah, I am not going to watch it. But I just remember from when I made the mistake of rewatching He-Man and Transformers that those ones don't age well.
They do not. Yeah. If you want to hold on to the nostalgia, don't crack that egg open. It ain't going to fry nicely.
Yeah, no, do Fraggle Rock or Muppet Babies. It's really hard to find because of rights issues, but I definitely know Fraggle Rock, maybe Gummy Bears and Gargoyles. Those two might hold up well. Mm-hmm. I know Disney Plus also has DuckTales. I haven't rewatched that. Maybe that holds up great. I'm not sure. Speaking of Fraggle Rock, though, I do know that Amazon Prime, which is a paid streaming service right now, has opened up their kids section for free. So you can watch most of the kids stuff on Amazon Prime for free. I don't think all of it, but a lot of their kids stuff is free on Amazon Prime. So that's another one that's doing something awesome. And another thing that's really cool is, I mean, celebrities right now are, a lot of them aren't working. They're kind of out of work. And I think a lot of celebrities have been doing a lot of cool things for people recently too. The one that I think, I haven't watched it, but what I think is really cool is John Krasinski, who people know from The Office, and he directed A Quiet Place. He started a show called Some Good News, and I guess the plan is that he's going to be doing this during the entire pandemic, and it's just a show about being uplifting and positive. And I think the first episode, he had a video call conversation interview with Steve Carell to mark the anniversary of The Office, so that's really cool. Zack Snyder recently did a commentary on Batman v Superman and sort of talked about the creative process to that and some of the ideas he had, how he had a 5-movie series. I know we've derided Zack Snyder, but he has his fans, so it's still a cool thing, even if I didn't like that movie. And then Jonah Hill has been offering screenwriting tips, because as well as being an actor, he's been a screenwriter. He directed mid-90s, so he wrote the screenplay to, I know, Sausage Party, and I don't think Superbad, but there's a few others that he wrote screenplays to too. And that's basically what he's been doing. He's been saying he's been staying at home, being creative. He's trying to encourage other people to take this negative into a positive and encourage creativity. And so he's been giving screenwriting tips and all this stuff, to my knowledge, is free. So that's really cool.
Which I mean, you look at what different people are doing and providing content, and it's really neat. And I'm sure for some of them, it's, you know, same situation as us. You're just looking for something to do that's creative, that, and I think if you're a creative person, regardless of whether, like, say you're a sculptor or whatever right now, I'm sure that you're looking for one way to just to share your art or share what you're passionate about with other people. And now's the time to do that, because people like being entertained. I mean, some people might say they don't like art, but if you ask them if they like music, they say yes. So pretty much everyone likes art. And so I think for the artistic creators, now's the time to share. And I have a lot of respect for the people that are spending their time doing that sort of thing. Myself, my own goal, don't tell anyone. It's just for myself. It's just as a self project, but it's because I've been playing around with home recording for a while, and just to do like a full like 10 to 12 song album sort of thing. So that's my long-term goal through this.
That's really awesome. I did not know that.
Yeah, so start working on it. It'll be a long-term project, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've got so many things I want to take advantage of this, and it's all about sort of balancing time. I want to bring a lot. I have a bunch of plans of putting more stuff on the blog, and I have, of course, this podcast, and still finding work in different places. But I also want to take advantage of, you know, start doing some novels and maybe even working on a screenplay and stuff. But it's just it's that balance. It's trying to find the time to fit that all in, because, you know, the kids are still home, and there's a lot. It's not the same as it was a few weeks ago, where I had several hours uninterrupted. I don't necessarily have that still, and so I'm still trying to find that formula. And I think it's going to be even harder, because next week it's looking like they're going to start doing online school for my kids, which also means that Emily likely is going to be online teaching her kids. And we also don't necessarily have four really effective computers, so I'm still going to have to figure out how that's going to work. There's potential that next week's going to make working even harder.
Yeah.
I'm not stressing out about it, because they haven't told us what their plan is. I mean, I'm the type of person that likes stressing out like really early, and that's not healthy. So right now I'm just like, I don't know what it is. So I'll worry about it when there's actually a problem to solve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you never know what format that could look like.
It could be just they pick up an assignment and then they do the assignment on a piece of paper.
Yeah, and that's sort of what I'd be thinking probably is easiest, because I mean the schools should know or probably have an idea that having an online requirement time, like everyone's got to be online at this time for this lesson, probably won't be working. So yeah, my guess would be just like each day there's just like maybe like something to read and then do something, or who knows?
Because I mean, yeah, like you're right. In our house, if Emily's required to be online to teach, and then both my kids are required to be online for a whole class session, they got to figure out that's three computers. And there's also people, you know, that four or five kids. And also most of us are being told to work from home. And how do you work from home? On the internet.
That's right. And no more carrier pigeons, because those could, you know, we don't know how long the virus could last on the feathers, but we don't want to risk it.
That is why I stopped doing that.
Yeah, that's the thing. And now everyone's being like, oh, we got to save the carrier pigeon industry because they're taking a huge hit. And I'm like, well, I don't know what to say. I can't use it, so I can't support it.
Yeah, it's also why I stopped supporting the pole licking industry.
I know, just craziness. Speaking of industries that don't make sense.
Before you move, one thing I don't think I mentioned, I do want to just mention too, because you're talking about art and music, or maybe I did mention it, but I also think it's really cool that lots of big bands that are really popular and probably could charge something are doing tons of free concerts all over the place, like online. Mm-hmm.
I think that's awesome. And like I said, I think for creative types,
this is the best time. And I mean, I like you said, it's not necessarily about profiting, But it sure heck is goodwill. They're going to remember you if you provide lots of fun stuff during this time.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's creative people like being creative. And so it's still going to happen. I think that's the neatest thing, is to see what evolves over time, how everything happens, because you're not going to be able to stop people. You can stop the live action studio business at the moment, but I guarantee you that the majority of the people involved with it, from whatever angle they come in, whether they're behind the scenes or in front of the scenes, they've still got that creative drive. They're still going to want to do something. They're going to want a project to work on.
I agree with you 100%. I think after this is all done, there's going to be a lot of cool screenplays that are waiting to be approved. Like, I think there's a lot of screenwriters right at home that are writing, and it's going to be interesting. I think Stephen King mentioned this, saying how as a creative person and a novelist who's in the middle of writing a book, he's like, he's really interested to see how the coronavirus and COVID-19 is going to change how we write. Because he's even saying, like, the book I was writing, I feel now I have to change if I'm trying to write a modern era book.
That's a wonderful point. That is a great point, because unless you do a period piece set in 2019, your modern time book, the environment's got to change a bit.
Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting to see, like, what genres even come up in a year and how we deal with this. I feel like there's no way that this isn't going to influence people creatively. Like, even with me, like, my own creative writing, I mean, I just, being stuck at home, those are the kind of ideas that seep in my head. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of claustrophobic story ideas.
Indeed.
Because creativity, in some ways, is working through your current life, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
I know you've been wanting to seg to this topic for about 5 minutes. I keep on derailing you, so I'm going to let you seg to what you want to talk about.
Okay, so now a topic that I no longer have a good seg for.
You had a good seg. Talking about industries that no longer work.
That's right. Theater owner...
Or makes sense. Sorry, you said make no longer makes sense.
No longer makes sense. And that's the theater industry. And you might think, how could that not make sense? Because, you know, look how profitable things are. And things are profitable. But the problem with the theater industry, and it's like everyone on the planet that thinks about it is understanding it, is the fact that they're going to be irrelevant at some point if they continue believing that the times aren't going to change how movies are distributed. You've got
and
this...
they are literally irrelevant right now.
Yes, they are literally right now irrelevant. And the longer this goes on, the more chance that when they get back, they're going to be like hugely irrelevant, because studios do want to make money. Studios want to keep their employees working. They and right now, people still want to consume media. So... the industry is going to find a way to move on. The industry is going to find a way to go. And what happened, what the theater industry is not happy about, is Universal decided to launch their animated Trolls World Tour day and date, which means that when it comes out in theaters, and there's not many theaters, but there are maybe a few out there, the day it comes out in theaters, it'll be available on demand for rental or purchase or whatever. This is something that, you know, in the limited release sphere happens every now and then. A few years ago, a movie that we both really recommended, Revenge, that was, you know, a hot... festival film, and when it came out in theaters, it also came out on video. So there's a few times this happens, but it's limited release, because theaters, if you're going to exhibit in a big theater chain in North America, you have to wait 90 days before you can have your video or your movie for rental. There is a bit of an early acceptance for, you know, movies being purchased ahead of that rental time, but they've been stuck on this for, well, Chris, has it been forever, shall we say? Since home video?
Since home video. Like, because there was no home video, obviously, like, in the 60s. And back then when it came to TV, I think the window was even longer. I think it wasn't until maybe a year or two before they would be able to let you show it on TV. But home video, 90 days. I feel like when it first started, the window may have been bigger than 90 days because it felt like forever when I was a kid for something to come out on VHS. I always felt like the next year.
Yeah, and that could have been how releases happened.
They were in the theater longer.
Yeah, exactly. And basically what's happened with the rise of streaming, with the rise of digital available content and how consumers are viewing movies and content, the theater industry has refused to change at all. And what most people in the world are seeing is another example of something, you know, the times are changing. It's like if you look back and you think, okay, there was probably people who were really good at making sundials. And they could construct a really kick-ass sundial that everyone in the village could come and look at and be like, oh, okay, I know what time it is. But if they ignored the fact that there was a change, there were changing technologies, if they ignored the fact that how people wanted to learn about time was changing, then they become instantly irrelevant. And I mean, it's a pretty extreme example, but you can look at, I mean, look at Blockbuster.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If you want the movie theaters, if they want to talk about not changing and you're going to be irrelevant, just call the owner of Blockbuster.
Yeah. Ask them how well it went for them. Because here's the thing. Not only is technology changing, but in the last 30 years, the speed at which technology is changing is exponential. And with the success of Netflix's streaming services that came out,
which is an example of a company that changed because they originally were a video delivery service.
Yes. And who had
mail
and who had to the chance to buy them for like $20 million back in the early 2000s.
Was it Blockbuster?
Blockbuster. And they decided not to.
Good call.
So yes, you look at like, if you look at things like, Netflix, if you look at Amazon, if you look at Apple, what makes these companies, or Google, all these huge companies, it's they adapt, they are learning new things, they're going in different directions, because if they stuck with what made them popular, they'd be irrelevant right now. They'd be passed by someone else. And so
they would be the record labels.
Yeah. Precisely. So the theater groups here are unhappy because Universal's doing this, and they seem to be kind of threatening Universal because the theater chains hold the power position, I guess, at this point in time. Like, when they don't have a single one open, they hold the power. So they kind of threaten Universal, like, we'll remember this. Now,
I'm only laughing because of how ridiculous it is that they were be threatening to Universal.
Mm-hmm. Because ultimately what may come out of this is that studios, especially if this goes on for 12 months, right? Studios may learn, well, you know, tentpoles, we'll put them in the theater, but we've learned that they can still make a lot of money at home. So we're going to bargain for a 60-day window. And, you know, theaters at that point, they're going to have nothing on the schedule. So what power play are they going to be able to do to go against that? Also, these studios may look at something, I don't know, like mid-range adult fare and think, wow, the amount of profit was much, much more predictable and solid through digital release. Well, we'll stick to tentpoles in theaters, but we'll keep everything else for VOD. The theater chain, like without the pandemic, they were going to become irrelevant at some point in the future. That's just the truth. Like, we look at history and we look at industries that didn't change, theaters would be, they'd be screwed at some point because consumers will win the battle. Consumers will end up dictating because they're the ones with the money. They're the ones that fuel all this. They're the ones that'll dictate how it goes. The pandemic now has completely sped the process up. Like, it's to the point where you got to wonder, are theaters even going to be relevant when all this ends? Anywho, it's, I look at it and I think, I understand Universal. Can I fault Universal? No. It's like anything we've talked about. These people are looking for ways to be entertained right now, and companies are looking to keep their doors open, to keep their people paid, and they got to sell things to get their keep their people paid. So I don't blame Universal at all. I look at the theater chains and think, could you have done something to help promote? Like, I don't know, because I look at Cineplex in Canada. They've got an online store. You know, make a deal with Universal. Yeah, we're in on this online stuff with you. We'll even, like, we'll promote you on the store. We'll send out emails to our customers. They could get on it. So, I honestly think that this is just showing how unaware of their situation that the exhibitors are in right now.
Yeah, that letter by the head of the team of American movie chains, it was a bad look. Them reprimanding Universal made them look really bad. Because, I mean, what I saw, what Universal was always doing was this great deed for customers. They're like, you know what, you're stuck at home with your kids. How about we give you a new release movie that you can rent? Like, you're not going to have to wait. I always just saw it as this wonderful act by Universal. And the movie theaters are basically saying, no, you shouldn't put out any new content for the next few months. You've got to wait until we can open up again. It made them look really bad. It also made them look really foolish when they basically said, we won't forget this. It's like, Universal has the Jurassic World franchise. Universal has the Fast and Furious franchise. Universal does a lot of the Blumhouse horror. You're going to say, no, we're not going to take any of those movies?
Yeah, that's, I mean, Universal is probably the next biggest chain or like studio in town.
You're not denying those movies.
Yeah, if you're threatening them, I can't remember. Do they have are they online yet? Or is it Warner Brothers that's online
Warner Brothers, I think, is the one that's going to be part of HBO Max. I don't think Universal necessarily has an online presence yet, but Universal movies, I think they show up on streaming services like Amazon Prime and stuff. So they have deals with streaming services because, was Crawl Universal?
I think so.
Because I think a bunch of Universal movies are showing up on Amazon Prime Canada. So I think they might have a deal because I know they have a bunch of new movies and I'm wondering if they have a deal with them. And that's why a bunch of movies show up on there.
Mm-hmm. Crawl seems like it'd be a Universal type film.
Yeah, it does. Paramount. I could be wrong though. It might be Paramount.
It was Paramount, yeah.
So maybe Paramount has the deal. Maybe it's a lot of Paramount. But either way, my point is Universal, I mean, like I said, they're not going to deny Fast and Furious. They're not going to deny these things. And so it makes them look really foolish because, like you said, the studio are the ones that have the goods. Mm-hmm. The movie theater is only the outlet. So, I mean, if they start threatening stuff, the movie studios are just going to say no thanks. And this is why I think Trolls, though, is a big game changer because Universal's been trying to shorten the window for a while. They tried to do it with Paranormal Activity, Ghost Dimensions, and then the movie chains reply by, okay, we're not going to even show that movie now, which did hurt its box office. They tried it with Tower Heist several years ago where it was, we'll release it 3 weeks after the theatrical release at $55. And the movie chains got really mad, so they canceled the idea. So Universal would try to do this for a long time. Jason Blum, who I said does a lot of movies for Universal, has been a big pusher for shortening that theatrical window. He wants it to get a lot smaller. I mean, the larger theatrical window made sense in the 80s when movies could stay in the theater for a year and were still making a lot of money. Now when we live in the era that like opening weekend is king and it trickles, I think it's time to look at changing and looking at how consumer habits have changed. And like I said, Jason Blum's been really big about this. And I think, like I said, Universal's been one of the ones that have been pushing this. I think Trolls for them is a bit of an experiment because one of the reasons why Wonder Woman and Mulan and Fast and Furious are not going to go straight to streaming is the studios think, well, we'd make a lot more money if it's in the theater. We would lose money if we did it on video on demand. You don't make enough on video on demand to recoup the cost that you lose it going to theater. And I think that's one of the reasons why studios have always listened to the theaters, because they say, well, we need the theaters right now because that's the most lucrative thing. If Trolls ends up making back budget, I think it's a $90 million film, if it ends up making a profit on video on demand, if it makes a decent profit, if it makes anywhere close to what was projected at movie, like if it had a theatrical release, I think we're going to see other studios following suit, because that's going to destroy the myth. If there is potential that they make decent money back on video on demand, it shows that video on demand is a viable thing. That $20 price tag for a movie is viable, and movie theaters better be scared as hell about that.
Yeah, two interesting things is the theaters did have it was weakening, but they did have a power position before this because it was just a cycle that everyone was locked into, and
one wanted to risk it.
Yeah, no one wanted to risk it because everyone was currently in that cycle, and it'd be hard to break out. That cycle's dead now, so it's going to have to restart up. And now their options are starting to get open. The big one, though, here's the huge, huge factor. So we'll just use the $90 million budget as an example. In the theaters, if they wanted to make money back off of their budget or make money, I'm having a hard time today. They would have to gross a lot more than 90 million because they're only getting 60% of those ticket sales. They're only getting 60%. So, you know, you have to make almost double, basically, especially after marketing budget. So they would have to make over $180 million in the theaters to start thinking that they were ahead. However, especially if they're distributing it off, like if they make a website and distribute it themselves, have people rent it off their website, that's 100%. They're taking every single dollar off of that rental. And so now all of a sudden to make money back, they don't have to go near as high to start seeing a profit.
And even if they are still using things like the iTunes and the different places, I'm guessing the percentage is not 60%. I could be wrong. I don't know what the percentage is, but there's potential that it's less. There's also potential that they can cut down a bit on the marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because number one, you're not paying for theatrical trailers in the theaters.
You just have a splash poster on iTunes and people see it and click.
Yeah, exactly. And also I think Apple is 30%. They take 30%. So
instead, much less than.
Yeah. So, yeah, lots of benefit right here. And like you said, the advertising, you still got to put it out there, but it's a different world and you're not paying those millions and millions of dollars that you would be trying to get these trailers in the theaters.
Yeah. So if Trolls is successful, what do you think will follow suit? Like what other movies do you think will take a risk, or do you think anyone else will, or do you think other people? Because I feel like the only reason why studios haven't pushed harder against the theaters, like you said, they had the upper hand and video on demand was unproven as a big money maker.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But if Trolls makes 90 mil, let's say Trolls makes like 150 million, which I don't know if it will, but if it does, to me, all it says to do is like, oh boy.
I honestly see Disney pushing to have something like New Mutants put out because they've got to be kind of worried at this point anyways of what it would do in the theaters.
And I could see it being a great rental when you're stuck at home. I'd probably rent it.
Yep. So I could see people start trying with their own movies that maybe they were worried about. Maybe, you know, are they gonna be able to get the money back in theater? And it's a way then to test with something they were afraid of losing money on anyways. So I see studios starting to do that and play around and have their own experiments.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, I could see something like, especially if Trolls does well, I could see Scoob being something now that the Scooby-Doo cartoon that's coming out, I could see that being a second one, another kids movie, give it a shot. I could Disney wanting to wait for Soul for theatrical because that's Pixar. But I can see something like Candyman going on there, or maybe Ryan Reynolds' Free Guy.
Yeah, I think it's very, very, very interesting, and the theaters are putting them. I'm not are putting them. They have, through their lack of meeting anyone halfway, they've put themselves now in a bad position. And, you know, I had talked a few weeks ago, or was it last week? I can't even remember. Everything changes so darn fast. I remember talking about GameStop and sort of the bad look that they got for trying to claim they were an essential business. They, when all this ends, everyone's going to be used to buying digital copies. People aren't going to be used to going into a store to pick up a physical copy. Because I can tell you this, on my PlayStation, when I get the physical copy, it still eats up the same amount, basically the same amount of hard drive space as if I downloaded it, because it loads it on the system so it can play fast. So there is absolutely, actually, at this point, for me, no reason for me to buy any physical copies anymore at all.
Yeah, no, I think digital copies are doing a huge rise. I've seen a lot of people who are doing digital copies right now. So I think that's going to change things a lot for video games. I think movies are going to do a big hit. What's also going to be interesting, too, is with lots of like celebrities and stuff starting podcasts. I know Camille Najani has started a podcast with his wife, who he co-writes with. I'm sorry, I forget her name at the second, but it's what Big Sick is based off of. They've started a podcast. Several people have started this thing to connect with people. I wonder if some of that is almost going to be expected to continue after this. This idea of this more personal connection and this more intimate type of shows. Like if we have this going on for a year, it's kind of going to be the new normal. And it's going to be hard for them to pull back on, I think.
Yeah, it is, because like everything, every aspect of entertainment is going to have a new normal. And when we return,
will this kill network TV? Like the idea, or even cable TV, where if we could have a whole year without sports, are people going to be kind of used to it and not need their cable subscriptions anymore? And that idea of network TV, like, well, I've been streaming all my shows. I don't need this.
Yeah, that's just it. It's everything. When life gets back to normal, there will be no norm. The normal will not be what we recognized before the pandemic, because all of our habits are going to be changed.
Yeah. I mean, there's some people that I've talked to, they're like, are you really thinking anything's going to change when we come back? And I just sort of say, if you look at history, if you look at when there's ever a significant life changing event, there is things that are put in place that are supposed to be short term, and they became long-term. Like the big one I always point to is World War II. Women were put in the factories because the men were at war. And if you look at what happens after World War II, women start having full-time jobs.
Yeah.
They did not want to just go back to be homemakers.
That's the thing. These things don't happen in isolation. They affect everything.
So we are going to then continue to be an essential service after the pandemic.
We were always an essential service.
We're going to become the most popular thing ever. The new celebrities, if you will.
The new, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I just think that's the truth. And like I said already, if you guys are enjoying this show, liking this format, please continue to share. And when we can, me and Scott have been bouncing about, even potentially maybe sometimes doing even a third show during the week. It's not a guarantee. I mean, basically the always show is our Monday show. We've got that set. We've been doing that for years. Everything else is kind of bonus, where we could do it when we want to. And if you appreciate us kind of doing this show, definitely give us some suggestions or just a kind word. We like that. You could do that at our email at themoviebreakdown@gmail.com. Or you can contact us as well at the Twitter. at Movie Breakdown 1 as well on Facebook, facebook.com/themoviebreakdown. Please follow those places. It helps us expand there, and we'll continue maybe to do exclusive content on those places if we know we have followers. Like I said, continue to share our stuff. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or just get any kind of podcast feed. You could get a podcast feed set up directly from my blog. From there. And then speaking of my blog, it's chrisspicer.blogspot.com. And I'm going to continue to try to put some new stuff on there. I've got a lot of different ideas. I'm going to try to do a bunch of review series, my usual personal stuff, some movie reviews, as well as I want to start doing a weekly fictional serialized story. And I'll just keep you updated of how my career is going on there as well. So just follow that as well. I have a podcast or a blog feed right on there that you can click and subscribe to. And I'm coming up with a lot of ideas to expand. And we've got an interesting partnership that's on the way that hasn't quite happened yet. But we'll announce that when it's official and all that kind of fun stuff. Things are going to get exciting.
Yeah. Also, I just want to mention, if you're looking for something interesting to watch online, you have Netflix. I've always been a fan of docuseries and everything, and Netflix has a great, I think they've got two fairly good World War II docuseries now, but I just got through a PBS docuseries on the Vietnam War called The Vietnam War, a film by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. And this, I mean, it's really good. If you want a lot of content right now, it starts back in 1858. That's as far back as the story goes. So it's very, very in-depth, well put together, some great interviews, 10 episodes, 17 hours combined. And so, it's really interesting and probably one of the best war docuseries I've ever seen.
You had me sold when you said Ken Burns. I forgot he did a Vietnam documentary.
Mm-hmm. This one's really good. Like I said, starts in 1858, and just looks at the geopolitical, history of the entire area and quite in depth. And the really great thing about the interviews they have, the talking heads, is these people are willing to be honest about how they felt and what they did during the war.
Well, that's a very fascinating war because of how much it changed America, it changed politics, how it set up the global atmosphere for several decades after. I mean, it was a big pusher in sort of elevating the Cold War, elevating certain ideas of communism. It changed our views of war. It changed in the States how we trusted authority and just a lot of things where I feel like a lot of the repercussions of what happened out of the Vietnam War in a lot of ways still exist today.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you look back in 2012 or 13, the Snowden dump, that was 2012.
Yeah.
And the fact that people found out that the government had been basically reading mass reading emails and intercepting calls and text messages. If you look at the outrage that people had towards it, if Vietnam never happened, the outrage would have been like there would have been people like millions of people in the streets marching, protesting. But it just, I think, goes to show how disillusioned the Vietnam War made people with government. And it's like, oh, they were lying to us? Oh, okay, well, that's what they do.
Yeah, no, it's really true. I think another thing that's important about Vietnam War, though, is it created our distrust in authority and the government, but it showed a time when we still trusted media and news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very interesting point, actually. Yeah.
Because that's the unfortunate thing today is you look at sort of what we're living in now, and I think the damage that was done by certain people that kept on trying to say fake news and discredit the media and those people who bought into it, I think that's kind of how, this stomping elephant known as COVID-19 that was very clear it was coming snuck up on people.
Mm-hmm. They're still dealing with it. Apparently, there are a lot of chiropractors out there that are giving misinformation about what they're doing. Like, it's not just like issues with people trusting the news. It's like hearing lies from actual certified professionals in the medical field saying that their adjustments boost the immune system and they'll help you fight COVID-19.
Stop discrediting experts.
Yeah. And so the like their college or whatever the organ, whatever the body is that they have to be certified through, they've had to issue, I think, like over 30 cease and desist things in Ontario alone in the last few weeks.
Yeah, my father, who is a doctor, he has never been a fan of chiropractors. There's a lot of them that he feels are, I don't know if he's exactly said this word, but he's definitely alluded to con artists. Mm. He's not saying that none of them do any good. He's not saying they're all bad. So please don't, get hostile feeling for my dad, but he does feel that there is many that give a bad name. What you just said basically validates his point.
It does. It does. My wife, who's actual whose chiropractor is actually amazing. Like it's funny in town. If someone says that they, I'm in pain, I can't wait to see Kate, that's the chiropractor that everyone floods to because she's legit. Now the unfortunate thing is all these people are now, I think, living without her services at the moment, but there's chiropractors that are going on because they're trying to make a buck off of this by these false claims, which
that's sort of what I was going to ask is, how's a chiropractor right now an essential service anyways to be open?
Yeah. I don't know. The fact, like the organizing body, both provincial and nationwide, they seem to be just livid that chiropractors are making these statements.
Yeah, no. Well, just because it hurts the credibility even more. And I think we're in a period of time where you nailed it. Is not only is news media, unfortunately, discredited, but experts are discredited. Because when you have like the climate change deniers, yet every scientist says it's true, they've been led to believe, well, no, like these credible sources, these experts, they're liars too, or they're misguided. Mm-hmm. And so it's unfortunate when you have people like this, professionals, that are misleading to make a buck, because it basically ruins all experts like you and I.
Exactly. If you want to talk to someone about cornflakes and other flaky cereal products, I am an expert.
Or, you could have went with movies, because we do a movie podcast.
Yeah, I suppose. Maybe next week I'll...
You just discredited our podcast. And we're like, I'm listening to a guy who knows about flakes, but nothing about movies.
Okay, well, here's the thing. If I've discredited our podcast, now it's actually not good for you to... to insinuate that maybe I'm an expert, because if I'm not an expert on movies, if I'm an expert on cornflakes, then what I've said isn't as damaging, right?
Okay, so I bring the movie knowledge. Scott brings the flakes.
That's
He's
right.
He's the flaky one.
Cornflakes and the history thereof.
When did it start?
Oh, actually, we're going all the way back to the late 1600s.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's a big one.
Who's the man who found the first flake?
Todd Gonville.
Oh, yes, Todd Gonville. So tune into our next bonus episode. Scott's going to dig deep into the history of Todd Gonville.
Yeah, we're going to have a good time. And you're going to be wondering, how is this not a movie? You will.
Aren't you working on the screenplay right now?
I may as well be. Oh, gosh.
Well, we'll collaborate. I feel there's still money in biopics.
Oh, there are. Anyways, let's wrap this up. You were trying to do that, and then I scuttled the whole attempt. Just like you scuttled my attempt to skag.
Which is how people know that this is the breakdown still.
That's right. Anyways, you mentioned our email, Twitter. Did you say subscribe to us?
I did.
Okay, perfect. Then all I'm going to say is, on Sunday, we'll be back. No, sorry, Monday. We're recording on Sunday, but we'll be back. and with a lot of fun movies, at least movies that I remember as being fun, feel-good movies, including Coming to America and Spy Kids.
Yeah, so we're, that'll be our more professional structured show.
That's right.
And we'll definitely have some more bonus episodes for you in the future too. So thank you so much for either listening to us or bearing us.
Yes. And sorry, I'm hearing some sort of ray gun bubble noise. I'm trying to figure out where that's coming from. Okay.
I'm the one with kids, but I'm not hearing it.
I honestly don't know. I'm hearing it. Am I going crazy? Has cabin fever set in and I'm like, there's ray gun bubble noises all around me?
I've been having like massive ear issues. So maybe part of my issues is that it blocks out ray gun bubble noise. I don't know if you even know what ray gun bubble noises are. I'm not even sure what I'm listening
for. If you heard it right now, you'd be like, oh, that's a ray gun bubble noise. Also, last thing before we sign off, I found out last week that my cat has been licking my earbuds.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I have to hide my earbuds now. I'm disturbed that my cat likes earwax, and I'm disturbed that I've been putting those in my ear after he's licked them.
Yeah, our cat, she hasn't gone to like licking my ears or anything, and I don't do earbuds, but my cat also lately has been really aggressive in like going after food. Like if we leave the kitchen, you'll come back and yeah, she'll be going to work on the butter or something, which was not a thing we had to worry about. But now she's become a mass licker. So I could feel that.
Yeah, that's a game changer.
I don't want cat saliva in my ears, but I also don't want to be spreading it on my toast.
No, exactly. So keep those cat's mouths in their tongue. Until next time.
Keep those cat's mouths in the tongue.
If you have to use ray gun bubble noises to do it, then, you know, go to whatever lengths.
I feel that's the only way you could get a mouth into a tongue.
Of course, ray gun bubble noises. Everyone knows that.
Well, tune in this weekend for Ray Gun Bubble Noise Central. And thank you so much for listening to this week's episode.
Take care, everyone.
Bye, everybody.